This programme was previously broadcast live on Love Sport Radio, so some items may be out of date. For more podcasts or to listen live, visit lovesportradio.com.
Well, it's like buses. It is like buses. You wait all season, well, the opening part of the season, for a victory. And then Wimbledon, AFC Wimbledon, go and get four in a flaming row. This is the AFC Wimbledon show, fan show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with Georgios Jonesios of the 9 Years podcast. George, I'm just going to sit back for the next 58 minutes or so, just let you take the floor, mate. Just wowse yourself in a wonderful victory yesterday.
Yeah, yesterday was huge for us. It was incredible that we were able to go and get that win. It's the second home win in a row for us, fourth win in all competitions in a row. You know, and we're starting to build momentum now, considering the turmoil that's occurred off the pitch over the last month or so with Wally Downs, which we'll talk about later. But the fact is now the club's coming together and we're starting to string results together, which is essential for us if we want to pull away from the bottom four.
Scenes, mate, I think they call it. Scenes in the 93rd minute. Terrell Thomas, of course, with the late winner against Portsmouth to make it 3-3 in League One. And it was scenes. Players running on the side. It was just carnage out there.
Yeah, no, it was incredible. It was one of those games where it was clear very early on that a point would have been a very good result for us. And we were time-wasting towards the end, holding on, trying to get a 0-0. Then out of nowhere, we got a free kick in the opposition third, and we just put it in the mixer, and Terrell Thomas was able to nod it home. And it was Jack Madlin, actually, who's an under-18, first time he's been involved in the first-team squad, who was the first sub who ran over to join in the celebrations, and everyone else ran in following him. And it was just, it was scenes, because for us, that was a huge, huge game, because Portsmouth are a side who have been struggling this year. They've had a very poor start, so for us to be able to go in and beat them, you know, it helps build momentum, keeps it going, keeps things building. We've got a huge game on Tuesday against Burton, and then we've got a 10-day break. So it's important we win this game, get something on Tuesday, so that we're not too far cut off by the time we're not playing on Saturday.
The fact that Madlin was the first to run on, you must be loving that in particular, because you're a big fan of the loan system, the youth system at the club and the academy system. So to see a young lad running on who knows what it's like and who feels the heartbeat of the club, I suppose. Yeah. You must have loved that.
Yeah, no, it was great. I mean, Jack Madlin's someone who hasn't got attention from the wider fan base because he's probably the second centre-back in his age group behind Archie Proctor. He's a year below Reuben Collins, who signed his pro contract this summer as well. So he's kind of gone under the radar a bit. So I think a lot of people were surprised when he was named on the bench on Saturday. But I think, you know, it's great to see young players getting experience, just being around the first team on a match day. And, you know, being involved on the bench and just being involved in those celebrations after we beat Portsmouth. For someone who's been with us, he's been going away with Wales age group teams as well. You know, he's a good player who big things will come from him. And it's great to get him that experience of he would have learned so much on Saturday just by being there.
We've got to talk about Titi, his first goal for the club. I mean, there was a chance he might not have even played yesterday, right? He was doubtful in the build-up to the game.
Yeah, Terrell Thomas was one of those who was 50-50, and I think maybe had Will Nightingale been fully fit or Rod McDonald been fully fit, maybe a risk wouldn't have been taken on him. But Will Nightingale was out, Rod McDonald still out for another week or so. So for us, Terrell Thomas was kind of forced into playing, and he had a good game. In my opinion, he was my man of the match candidate from yesterday, and he was such a dominating performance. He won more headers than anyone else on the pitch from our team. He had such an encouraging performance, and for us to win it so late on, just the momentum that that's given us that we can build on, especially when you look at the stats from the game, because we only had 37% possession. You know, they had nearly twice as many passes as us. You know, so for us to be able to go into that game where we were being outplayed, they had everything, and for us to get into snatch a late winner, it was a proper old-school Wimbledon performance. And that's what we needed.
Proper old school Wimbledon. Speaking of which, this is what Glyn Hodges had to say after the game.
For me, that's the best performance. We weren't at our best, and obviously they're very good, so they started to play against the Pompey side, and they caused us problems and kept the ball well, and they got quality all over the park. But to stay in the game with, as I say, the three centre-halves and the goalkeeper, the highlight particularly, putting their head in the way and blocking and getting their bodies there and stopping crosses, it was great. And we were probably resilient at half-time. You know, you've got a foothold in the game, you keep in the game, then there's always a little bit of quality and it could win you the game, which is what Max did. Max put a great ball in and it was there. It was he couldn't have missed, but he was on the plate for him and he put it away well.
Couldn't have missed. It was on a plate. Crikey. I mean,
That's a bit harsh.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a good header.
It was a blooming good header.
Yeah, I think that's very harsh. I mean, it was a great ball in from Max Sanders, getting one of, you know, who's been incredible
been great,
for
hasn't
us
he,
since he came
weeks.
In. He's really made a big difference. But to say he should be scoring, that's very harsh on Terrell Thomas.
He's left. It's a great header.
Yeah, that's a great header for him. And I'm a bit surprised to hear Glenn come out saying that, because it was a good header. And had he missed, no one would have mentioned it. It wasn't one of those who, had he missed, you would have left the ground talking about the miss.
Mm.
It was just one of those. But it was a great header. And the fact that it was so late on meant Portsmouth didn't have time to come back from it. And it was the timing more than anything else of that goal that just meant it killed the game. There was about, I think the referee played about 2 minutes after the goal was scored, and nothing really happened in it. And for us, that just tells you how deflated Portsmouth were, that they couldn't come back for the last couple of minutes.
Interestingly, he said that's the best performance so far. I mean, presuming he's referring to the entire season, is he? Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's funny, because when you look at that, and United have just drawn with Liverpool, Old Trafford, Man United won, Liverpool won, and United only had 30-odd% possession, and a lot of United fans would look at that and say, you know, it's probably one of our better performances this season. You've mentioned the stats already, you know, Portsmouth 62 possession to 38 for the Dons, and 22 shots from Portsmouth compared to the 9 from Wimbledon. Yeah.
Now, and that's the thing, like, Nathan Trott had to make 9 saves. He was commanding of his box. He actually won the 90th podcast man of the match, as well as the sponsors man of the match this week.
Wowzers.
And I think that's the first time I've been on where both of them have agreed on the same man of the match. And it's one of those where it was such a good performance, because it was one of those where we knew if we went out and attacked, Portsmouth would tear us apart because of the players they've got. So it was very much sit back, do our jobs, try and get a 0-0, maybe snatch something towards the end. And that's exactly what happened. It was very much a game plan done perfectly. Because even though Portsmouth had 62% possession and had had over 450-odd passes, you know, these are the stats, and for us to be able to go in and do that, and Portsmouth didn't really have a number of really good chances. We probably had the Terrell Thomas chance, which obviously we scored. Marcus Force had a really good chance in the first half. We hit the post as well. So even though we only had 37% possession, we had the better chances, and that's why it was such a good performance from us yesterday.
So Nathan Trott obviously made some very good saves. I'm sensing that he might be a certain man that you're going to reference in future shows in years to come, George. He might take the mantle off of someone else. However, what happened? What happened in that second? I mean, there's a few talking points, like you say, but Ellis Harrison, crikey, that was a heart-in-mouth moment, no?
Yeah, no, it was. Nathan Trott, it was a back pass. Nathan Trott, considering the problem with Nathan Trott is because he's come through a Premier League academy system where it's very much goalkeepers are passing out from the back. He does like to take a second and see if there's an option to play it. And that just meant that in League One, when you got that attacker who will not, you know, let you do that, when he'll close everything down, Ellis Harrison did that. Nathan Trott ended up kicking it. Harrison got in the way and luckily it bounced wide. I don't know how, because I definitely thought it was in from where I was sitting.
Mm.
Somehow it didn't go in, and it just meant that we were something like that. I mean, that would have killed us had that gone in. But it's just something, people mustn't forget, when you're talking about comparing Trott to our goalie from last season, it's Trott's first loan. It was our goalie from last year's second loan.
This is very good. He's trained himself, David. Yes. He's trained himself not to say a certain name. We had the dinger ready and everything. All right, there will come a time.
There will come a time when I forget. But basically what we're doing now is Trott's, because this is first loan, he is having to learn that he can't take that amount of time anymore. You can do it in academy football. You can't do it in senior football. And he'll learn from that. He'll learn from the experience that he had on Saturday when he was closed down and when his clearance was blocked, that in times and situations, especially when it's a tight game, you're trying to get the 0-0 or get something late in the game, sometimes as a goalie, you've just got to kick it as far away as you can and hope something happens from it.
Yeah, absolutely. But another good performance, like you say, from Nathan Trott, who will be a pivotal player, of course, for AFC Wimbledon this season, already proving to do so. In fact, the fact that he's won the 9 years podcast man of the match, that might even be the greatest moment of his career, I reckon, George.
Yeah, no, definitely.
A fledgling career to win that. Tell you what, that is right up there. A couple of other talking points. You mentioned Marcus Force. Now, we had the Brentford fan show on last week prior to the England game. It turned into something slightly different because of what was happening in the England game. But to begin with, there was a lot of chat about Marcus Force. And I reiterate it, mate, they are gutted almost that he's doing... Well, not gutted that he's doing well. They're delighted that he's doing well. But they are just thinking, crikey, we just wish he was doing that at Griffin Park this season.
Yeah, no, he was immense again. Everyone at our club knows he's levels above us and levels above League One as a whole. He's definitely at least championship level at the moment.
At least championship level?
Yeah, I think that from what I've seen of him, the style of play he plays of playing on the shoulder, getting in behind and taking chances. He's certainly a very good Championship player when he does that. I could see him going on and playing Premier League football in the future. But he had a good chance. It was
Let's talk about that, because I couldn't believe it when I saw the highlights after the game. I couldn't believe that he'd missed it.
No, I think it's tough to say he missed it. It was a great block from the defender. And you mustn't forget, he'd beaten three men to already get there.
Mm.
And I think it was one of those where he should have scored, but the fact he created a chance and we won a corner. Again, he's very young. He hasn't played a huge amount of senior football. But I think the worry from all Wimbledon fans is none of us think he'll be here in February. At the moment, we've got until the end of the season, but there's no way he's not being recalled in January if he carries on the way he's going.
So this has been a topic of debate, and I say it in every AFC Wimbledon fan show, and I say it in every Brentford fan show, and no one seems to know the actual answer. Do you know the answer? So what's the crack with the deal? Can he be recalled in January?
Normally you can. I mean, I don't know anything specifically about this specific loan deal, but 9 out of 10 loan deals, the parent club will have the option to recall him, especially for someone like Marcus Forss, who was a fringe player for them anyway.
Mm.
I'd be very surprised if they don't have the option of recalling him in January. And I'd be amazed if they don't, the way he's going. I mean, you look at his stats that came on, I think Kevin said him last week on the show, just, you know, his shots per goal ratio and his chances created and all of that, is up there with the best in League One, and he's only been playing League One football for just over a month now. And he is so far ahead of League One level, it's unbelievable. Not unsimilar to Aaron Ramsdale last season.
Hey, there we go.
Aaron Ramsdale.
It's just one of those things for him now where he has to keep going, he has to keep building on this. Hopefully we have him for the end of the season. But if we don't, we've got 9 league games with him left.
Mm, I don't want to be there on the day that he does get recalled. If he does get recalled, no. George, you're going to be beside yourself, mate.
Yeah, we've got 9 league games left this calendar year. So assuming he goes back at the start of January, we've got 9 games with him.
For double figures as well, because that's what you predicted, didn't you?
Yeah, I do think he'll get to double figures, the way he's going so far.
Okay, now, before we move on, can you just clear up the penalty incident that never was? What happened there?
Okay, so we had a good opportunity. Pickett flicked the ball up over a defender's head, tried to run onto it, and was fouled. The referee straight away pointed to the spot. Long sort of Portsmouth players were arguing. Ended up being a free kick. I was directly in line with it, and it was outside the area. I was amazed the ref gave a penalty. Most people I've spoken to agree it was outside the area. It was definitely a free kick. You know, the right decision came towards the end, but it was a terrible decision to give a penalty in the first place.
And it was bizarre, right? Because Pickett thought it was a foul. Marcus Forss was almost preparing to take the penalty.
Yeah,
and it's kind of like VAR without the VAR.
Yeah, no, and that was the thing. I mean, the referee pointed to the spot fairly early. Then the linesman was walking to where he'd stand if it was a penalty. So clearly they both thought it was a penalty, even though it wasn't. And Portsmouth players somehow convinced the referee it was a free kick. So I'm not sure how he reached the decision of it being a free kick, considering the two officials closer to it both agreed it was a penalty, even though they were both wrong. And I'm not sure how they reached that decision, because if it was just they gave in to Portsmouth player pressure, then that's not right, even if they came to the correct decision at the end.
So sorry, you were in line with it, you're saying?
I was pretty much perfectly in line with it. Everyone around me who was in line with it, we all agreed definite free kick.
Lovely.
It was
stuff.
A yard or so outside.
Very honourable of you there, George. Would you be saying the same had you not won the game?
Yeah, I think we probably would. Because it was just one of those things where we all knew it was a free kick at the time. It was one of those where had we got the penalty, we would have been incredibly lucky. But we know had we got that penalty, we knew that would have haunted us in the second half of the season when these things come back around.
Absolutely. Haunted you in Halloween coming up, George. You like that? Clever, aren't you?
Yeah.
Honesty is the AFC Wimbledon policy. This is the AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport. Plenty more coming up.
For the fans, by the fans. Love Sport Radio.
Indeed it is. The AFC Wimbledon fan show on Love Sport, no less. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with the man that can, the absolute legend of the Dons, George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. Now, if you'd like to get in touch with George, it's very easy to do so. 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number or you can tweet us at Love Sport Radio. Now, George, it doesn't surprise me to hear that you just told me you used to be a ball boy.
Yeah, at AFC Wimbledon, I used to be a ball boy, and I was a ball boy for a very long time.
A very long time. How long are we talking?
7 years.
Can you play a bit, George? Play a bit of football?
Not anymore, no.
Were you allowed to kick the ball back, or did you have to roll it?
I normally rolled it, but I think we were allowed to kick.
How strict are the rules when it comes to ball boying?
Much stricter in the Football League than they were when we were in the non-league,
right?
Basically.
Okay. So have you been a ball boy in the Football League?
Yes.
Right.
Spent 5 years doing it in the Football League.
Did you really?
Yeah.
Ever any abuse from the fans, mate?
Oh, yeah, lots of it.
Oh, really?
But I deserved most of it.
You didn't give it back, did you?
No, not often.
Not often? George, very unprofessional of you. Well, I mention this because Mark Hendricks, hello Mark, has tweeted saying, credit given where credit is due. Portsmouth did an honourable thing when the ball boy kicked the ball on the pitch by giving us a throw-in as well. What happened here?
So, cross came in from Portsmouth in the first half. Ball boy had thought he'd gone for a goal kick, so walked onto the pitch to pick it up and throw it back to our keeper. Referee had determined it hadn't gone out and was going to go out for a throw-in. And referee and Portsmouth came to a decent conclusion of basically Portsmouth would kick it out for the throw where it would have gone out anyway, rather than having a drop ball or anything contentious there. You know, it was one of those things you see once every 5-6 years as a football fan of a ball boy getting too eager and getting involved. But I think referee and Portsmouth dealt with it very well.
Great stories of ball boys over the years. The one that always springs to mind, for most people, I think, as well, is the Eden Hazard in Swansea one. Didn't he have like his own Twitter account where he almost gave himself a brand as to being the ball boy that was going to cause loads of trouble?
Yeah, he did try and do that. I think that the FA told Swansea he wasn't allowed to do that very quickly. But the thing is, the days of fans being ball boys like I was back in the day, where that doesn't happen anymore. Most clubs, especially even at Wimbledon now, where it's the academy players who were not playing on the Saturday do it. And that just takes away something special from, you know, the young fans who want to go in and get involved. Because I do all these different volunteering roles on a match day and non-match day now for the club. And it was being a ball boy that first got me involved at the club. You know, and I think it's something that has been taken away from young fans that, you know, the game's worse off for it.
So, sorry, how has it been taken away from you?
Because it's given to academy players now. Academy players do it rather than young fans.
Of course, right. Yeah, I completely agree with you on that one, actually. Another example that always springs to mind when I think of ball boys and ball girls was, I think it was an FA Cup tie, topical, because it's been the FA Cup qualifiers this week. We're going to get onto those later. But it was a cup tie between Blackburn Rovers and Liverpool at Ewood Park, I believe, in the early 90s. And Liverpool scored a last-minute equaliser. I think it was a Mark Atkins own goal. Blackburn were in Division 1, I think, at the time. Well, Division 2, I should say, when it was Division 1, Division 2, Division 3 and Division 4. And the pundits after the game moaned at the girl because she gave the ball back too quickly to the Liverpool players. So you never can win as a ball boy or ball girl. It's very difficult.
Yeah, no, I mean, you get in trouble if you waste too much time, but normally the players are very good at indicating, you know, the home team indicating just how quickly they want the game to move on. Or not so, if that's the case.
Not so. That. Do you ever have any directions when you were a ball boy?
Yes.
Did you?
Yes.
I bet you can't reveal them. Is that what you're going to say?
Yeah.
Yeah, of course you are. Typical. Okay, we'll move swiftly on. Of course, that is 4 wins in 5 games for Glyn Hodges since he took over from Wally Downes as the interim manager at AFC Wimbledon. And the news has come out this week, of course, that Wally Downes has been suspended from all football and football-related activity for 28 days by the club. I'm going to read out the official statement that AFC Wimbledon have released this week. AFC Wimbledon manager Wally Downes has been fined £3,000 and suspended from all football and football-related activity for 28 days until November 14th, 2019, after admitting breaching FA betting rules. Downes placed 5 bets on football matches between the 30th of November 2013 and the 30th of January 2014 and 3 bets between 16th of March 2019 and 12th of July 2019. There's a lot of dates in that statement, for crying out loud. But yes, that is now official. The last time you were on, George, there was a bit of, well, people didn't know. There was a bit of conjecture as to whether he'd responded to the charge. 4th of October was obviously the time that he did that. I'm presuming that he didn't.
No, he had his hearing this week on Thursday at the FA at Wembley. And it was one of those things where I think pretty much everyone knew the hearing was coming up. It was a bit of a surprise how long it took because, like you said, he had until the 4th of October originally to respond. So the fact the hearing didn't take place till 10 or so days after that surprised a few people who thought it might have been a slightly quicker process. Because, like you said, while this process has been going on and while he's been waiting for his hearing and to submit his response, we have played 5 games. You know, and for a club in our position, that could have ruined our season. Had we lost those 5 games, that we would have been in a very, very poor situation. And the fact is, you know, but now it's come out, he's had the hearing. It is a 28-day ban from all football and a small fine. But, you know, I think the bigger thing here is, where do we go from here? Do the club stay with Wally? Do we offer it to Glenn Hodges? Do we offer it to someone else? You know, and I think that is something that the club need to decide very quickly. I mean, like I said, we've got a big game Tuesday away to Burton, and then we've got 10 days without a match. So we've got a window now where we have to sort this, but also where whoever comes in, whether it is Glenn, whether it's someone else on the first team coaching staff, whether it's, you know, someone outside the club at the moment, it's very important they get the fan base behind them very quickly, because we've got Lincoln at home and then an FA Cup game. So it's a very big period when we come back from our weekend off. And it's so important the fan base get behind whoever is named manager, if Wally does leave. Because the last thing we can have in a season where every game counts is a split fan base.
Mm. The interesting thing for me amongst all of this, and I don't know how you feel as an AFC Wimbledon fan, but I haven't heard anything, well, not personally, I'm not mates with Wally Downes, but I haven't seen anything from Wally Downes on this. There's been no quote, there's been no interview with the club. No. Do you think that's due to come, an interview with the club?
No, I don't think the club will... When this happens...
Just nothing.
If Wally was to leave the club, I don't think the club would ever mention his name again. That's what happened last time when we had a manager who left for disciplinary reasons. And I think, realistically, nothing will come from the club. They would just say, you know, this is the outcome, this is where we're going from here. And that'd be the last we'd hear from him. There won't be an exit interview published on the website or anything, I can't imagine, because there wasn't last time. And I do think, realistically, though, if you look in the local journalists and on social media, there's been a fair amount of press coming from sort of players who played alongside Wally when he was a player and who were his friends still. And the attitude they're coming from is not one that puts the club in a good light. And it's just a question of, you know, where that's coming from.
So elaborate on that.
So there's been a lot of articles written by ex-players, friends of Wally Downes, coming very close to saying he's been thrown under the bus by the club. Mm. Which I think is incredibly unfair, because whatever, you know, your view of how the club's handled this, he has broken FA rules. So right up till now, the club haven't been able to do anything other than what they've done. It'll be the next step that will decide how the club handle this. Whether you think Wally has to go, whether you think you can come back. And on that note, I do think that the attitude on that has changed, because if you look Peterborough, I think there was a lot more support for Wally to stay than there is now. Glenn's had won 4 of his 5 games. I think the attitude from some of our fans has changed slightly because of that. Because they did,
towards Glenn Hodges.
Towards Glenn Hodges, or, you know, basically say, because it's not just the results, it's the performances. The players look happier, there's just seems more energy around the place. And I think that could be a factor. It shouldn't be a factor, but it could be. Because where Wally is now, the club has to make a decision, like I said, probably over the next 3 days, about what we're going to do from here.
So do you think that is the case? Because it's 14th of November, right? He will return if he does return. So as things stand, we are currently, obviously, on the 20th of October. You say there is that 10 days grace period, if you can call it that, after the Burton game to when you then play Lincoln. You've got the FA Cup clash as well in that. His next game, if he was to return, would be away at Blackpool. You reckon within the next 3 days this is going to get sorted out?
I think the club have to, because it's not about when he can come back. It's about making sure that whoever is in, whether it's going to be Glenn who stays in charge or someone else, you've got to look at it and basically say, we need this sorted quickly, because this can't drag out, because that's not good for the club, it's not good for the players, it's not good for the fans. They just need to basically confirm what they're thinking and make that decision quickly, because the last thing anyone needs is for this to drag out.
Well, that's part... Listen, I'm not going to say it's the fault of the club, but since this all started, the club will be making a further statement in due course. That's kind of what you keep hearing, and I get that they have to toe an official line, but it does leave everyone, like yourself, on tenterhooks a little bit, I suppose, as to what exactly is going to happen. Zach Thompson has tweeted us, "My personal belief is that the suspension has given us a chance to see how the team would do if we sacked Wally." It's a fair point. "It's easy to forgive him for the bets, although I'm not sure you would find it easy, George. Honesty is obviously your best policy. But hasn't this shown us that he's not the manager we want?"
I think the thing is, you can't say, you know, over the next 28 days we'll find out how well we'd do without Wally. We've seen that over the last 5 games. You look, the only game we haven't won out of that was Peterborough away, and we won the second half there. And we're very unlucky not to get a draw. And I think really for that. That's settled the thing of, you know, is Wally the glue that holds this whole squad together? Would the wheels fall off the bus if he wasn't around? And I think the answer to that is no, because they haven't yet. So the main worry is that if we were to give it to Glyn, would it be like a situation with Solskjaer at Man United, where we're great when he's caretaker, but then all of a sudden something changes when he's named full-time manager and things start going wrong? I don't think that'll be the case, but that's the only reason that would make me think maybe we need to take our time on this. But even so, I can't see it happen. I think we just need to make the decision quickly and try and move on from this.
If you do make the decision quickly, though, if you're saying that this is something that needs to get rectified within the next 3 days, realistically, unless they've been looking at other options already, that would be that Glyn Hodges becomes the next AFC Wimbledon manager, right? Or yeah. You're saying they've got to sort it out within 3 days to get someone new.
Well, no, I think Glyn's won 4 of his 5 games, including games against Portsmouth and 2 of our sort of relegation rivals, so to speak. So he can't have done much more in the 5-game spell that he's had. But I do think it has to be someone internal. Because you look at this, we don't have the money, so we're not going to be able to spend big in January, whatever happens. We've got a new stadium coming up, so we'll be restricting our spend probably next summer as well. So realistically, I think we do need an internal hire, whether it's Glyn Hodges or someone else from the first team coaching staff. And I think that's something that we need to do quickly if we're going to get rid of Wally.
I know you're a very moral individual, George, and I love that about you. I applaud you for that. So with regards to what you want for the club moving forward, are you content with Glyn Hodges being the manager? Is that your favoured choice, your favoured appointment? And if that is the case and Wally Downes does just slip into the ether and no statement is made from the club and there's no reference to Wally Downes ever again in the club's history, is that not just a bit sad for it to end in that way?
But it wouldn't be the first time in the club's history, because our very first manager was sort of left under a cloud with a disciplinary issue and all of that. And he's very much forgotten about in club history. And I think it's something which we need to make sure, because the last thing they want is sort of the club's name to get dragged through the mud with, you know, ongoing stuff and get into the media and basically keep dragging this up. Once whatever decision is made has been made, we just need to close shop and move on. And hopefully Wally, whatever happens, can do the same.
Absolutely. Interesting to hear your thoughts, George. We're going to move on to this a bit more in a moment, and then we'll get on to the FA Cup and, of course, your academy and development squad update, which I know that you love doing. This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport.
From Ali to Zaha, we've got it covered. Love Sport Radio.
This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. If you want to get in touch, 0208 7020 558. You can WhatsApp us on that number or tweet us at Love Sport Radio 2, which is exactly what Mod Womble has done. Now, it's good to get different perspectives on this show, George, isn't it? There are some that are for what's happening with Wally, some that are against it, some that are a bit indifferent. And Mod, as I'm going to call him, has said, gutted about Wally. We have short memories after last season. It's an absolute disgrace that the club never sent a representative to his hearing. Disgraceful. Now, he's gone on to say, I'm not saying I don't support Glyn. As I do, it's the way the club treats people. Utter disgrace, and the board should understand that.
Okay, first thing I think we need to address there is the club haven't commented on the rumour that went around on Facebook the other day saying that they had no one there to support Wally at his hearing. So I think we shouldn't be saying that until the club comments on that. Mm-hmm. But I think the club have handled it the best you can, because it's a... Whatever people think of this, saying, oh, it's only a couple of bets, it's in breach of FA regulations. That's, realistically, the second he's charged with that, I don't think the club had an option other than to suspend him, waiting for the outcome of the hearing. And I think that's probably the only course of action open to the club. And I think, realistically, whatever you think about, you know, Wally, you know, last year, it was a miracle that kept us up. How much of that was down to him? How much was that down to players who... Did he have a huge amount of involvement in bringing people in? Because, I mean, ignoring the impending alarm, but Aaron Ramsdale was meant to join us last summer under Ardley and then came in. Bezo was a big part of that. That wasn't really a Wally signing. Steve Seddon came in, apparently a Bassey signing more than a Wally signing. You know, how big a role did Wally have in keeping us up last season? That's up for debate. but I don't think he should get immunity from anything just because of what happened last year, because otherwise we're in the position where some people had us with Neil last year, were saying, oh, he got us up, he's kept us up, we should keep him forever. That's not an argument in my view.
Is there, though, with what you've just said there, in terms of, are you now questioning, because of what's happening, what Wally did last season? So is it changing your perspective on how the club performed towards the end of the last season?
No, I think, realistically, I think without Ramsdale and without Seddon, I don't think we stay up last season, no matter who's our manager. And those two players weren't necessarily Wally bringing them in. So I don't think that Wally gets 100% credit for keeping us up. He played a role, of course he did. But I'm not sure it was solely down to him. And whatever your opinion on that, that doesn't give him immunity for, you know, either the sort of irregularities regarding his betting or the form we've started this year in. You have to look at keep moving forward. Because even if you say, yeah, he pulled off a miracle, he kept us up, under him, we were heading for relegation this year. So all he did is delay the inevitable. Mm. You know, so I don't think that that's a defence for keeping someone who's broken FA rules or, you know. Also, the way we were going under him, we were 10 games without a win. Would we have wanted him to stay much longer anyway? Mm. You know, and I think that's got to be the case for this. And I don't think that you can criticise the club for the action they've taken so far. And I think it's very harsh to say Wally should be allowed to do whatever he wants just because he kept us up last year.
Okay, just very, very quickly to finish on this before we do move on. The fact that Mod references the representatives not going to the hearing, and obviously you're saying this is alleged, we don't know, but has this not been part of the problem throughout this entire process, that perhaps just a bit more transparency from the club, just to say this is what happened at Wally's hearing today, or this is what is going on? I understand it is purely a rumour, you're saying, from Facebook, and I'm not saying that the club should respond to everything, because then you set a very dangerous precedent, but a bit more transparency regarding this whole situation would have maybe alleviated some of those issues.
But I'm not sure what, I mean, you can't comment on something until he's charged. And once he's charged, you can't say anything because then it's a legal case and you can't jeopardise that. Mm-hmm. And right now, we haven't decided if we're going to, you know, remove him from his post or if he's going to stay. Whatever the outcome of that, there could be legal options available there. So we can't say anything in case we're influencing what could happen from that. Realistically, I'm not sure what more the club could have said, you know, to the general public, basically saying, you know, we've done this, this is what happened at the hearing, because that's confidential. The FA wouldn't be happy if we went and said, you know, this is what happened at the hearing. Those things are behind closed doors with no media for a reason. And I think the club, everyone has to respect that.
Okay, that is George Jones of the 9 Years podcast, and this is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport.
Giving your team a voice, Love Sport Radio.
This is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport. Myself, Matt Beadle, here with George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. The time is upon us. Cometh the hour, cometh the Academy and Development Squad update and loan watch with George Jones.
Well, I think it's the first thing we have to talk about in this section this week is on Wednesday, the under-23s had a game away to Oxford. We won 4-1, and that's a good win. Oxford had a very strong side out that game. Zach Robinson, who's the under-18 player, first-year scholar, he's out on loan at Basingstoke at the moment. He played for us on the under-23s and scored twice. Tommy Wood, who's scoring for fun at Leatherhead, also scored for us. And Anthony Hartigan scored an absolutely stunning free kick. And it's so good to see that the players who are out on loan are coming back for these under-23 and reserve games, because it's keeping them involved in the setup. And they can move that forward so that if at the end of the loan deal, the club says, do you know what, we're going to get these boys back, they're going to be involved in the first team sooner than perhaps we thought. They're more ready for that than had they just been on loan at a Conference South club and not having any game involvement with us at all for a month. And I think that's key. And moving on quickly to loan watch, Jack Rudoni played again. He's playing at number four, and to be playing in a sort of a number four position at Conference South level at his age, he'll be getting an invaluable experience for us, which will benefit him so much in the long run. They were away to Chelmsford. They didn't get the result they wanted, but for him, it's more about the experience. Ayub Asal played as the Metropolitan Police, got a crucial win over over Western Supermare. Tommy Wood and Finney McNabb at Leatherhead, who beat Hornchurch. Tommy Wood, like I said earlier, he got a goal there as well. And, you know, these are players who are coming in, doing really well, scoring goals for fun when they're out on loan, whether it's Ayub Asal, who's getting really rave reviews over at the Met Police, and Tommy Wood, who's scoring for fun again at Leatherhead, like he did when he was out on loan in the same level last season. And it'll be great for these players because, you know, these are young players who are not all of them are ready for League One football just yet. So getting them games and minutes in men's football at a lower league is key for them. So when they do come back, whichever of them do make it and are ready to come into the first team either this season, next year, or the year after in a couple of cases, they'll be so much better because of this experience playing men's football, because that's what they need. And that's what people like Toby Sibbick and Paul Kalambayi, who came into our first team more recently, they didn't have that loan spell, and that really held them back when they first came into the first team.
You'd love a team fully made up of AFC Wimbledon youngsters, wouldn't you?
Yeah, but I think every fan wants that from every club. Every club, you want players to come through your youth academy because they understand the Wimbledon way. They understand what's important to the fans and the passion behind it. And I think that's why it's so important, especially for a club like us, which has such a unique history. It's so important the players get it and the young players do get it. And that's why it's great to see, and you look at them and they come in and they are ready for first team football. Mm. Paul Kalambayi, like I said, his development, he probably came into us a year later than he would have done had he had loan deals when he was younger than he was. And it's about getting the young players minutes out on loan so they can come in and play in the first team, because at the end of the day, that's the point of having an academy. You know, I mean, it's great to see people like Joe Bursick, Will Mannion, Harrison Fulk, Stan Agee, who have gone on to play for Premier League Championship clubs and for England age group setups in a couple of cases. You know, it's great to see that, but really we want them staying with us. And now that pathway is there, it makes it so much easier to convince top quality young players to join our academy.
Absolutely. Can we talk about Leo Castledine as well?
Yeah, Leo Castledine, son of former Wimbledon FC player Stuart Castledine. Leo's been someone who's been at the academy for, I think, his whole football career, and he's just been called up for England under-15s. And that's a great, great sign for our academy, that because it used to be we got players called up for England 17s and under-18s when they were a bit older and a bit closer to our first team. But the fact that players in our under-15s and 16s have just been noticed for international setups now, like Jack Madlin, who was on the bench for the first team on Saturday, he's been playing for Wales since, I think, under-15s when he first got their schoolboy call-up. And it's so great that countries are now paying attention to our academies at the younger age groups, saying, you know, these are the players who we can see they're great now and we can be trusted they will be developed properly over the next few years. And that pathway is there for them to get into the senior team to see if they can make, you know, their country's under-21s or their country's first team in the future. And I think that's great to see. And Leo Castledine, like I said, being the son of an ex-player as well, I think the fans are really going to be happy when they hear that news.
Yeah, absolutely. I think I remember Stuart Castledine's first goal for the club. So I remember watching it on Match of the Day. I'm going to stick my neck out, and anybody listening, if I'm wrong, I apologise, hammer me for it. I think it was Coventry. I could be wrong. And it was sort of a bumbled effort that slipped under who I would imagine maybe was Steve Ogrizovic or Jonathan Gould at the time. That's what I'm going with. Pretty sure Highfield Road, Stuart Castledine, his first goal for the club. I could be wrong, around 93, 94. Anyway, we move on to the FA Cup. George, of course, the draw is coming up on Monday. Firstly, are you looking forward to that?
Yeah, I think it's great. I mean, the FA Cup and the FA Youth Cup as well. You know, these are competitions the fans look forward to because you can play someone who you don't normally play. You could get, and especially as a League One team, normally you're two wins away, well, this year potentially one win away, depending on the draw on Monday, you're potentially one game away from getting Man United away and earning £7 to £10 million, which for us, that's, you know, club-changing money. And it's just, and the reason I said that one win away is because of the unique Bury situation earlier this year, there is a bye for one team in the first round.
I was going to say, mate, so please explain this. So because Bury, because a lot of people don't know this, to be fair, and of course you are a stickler for the rules, you know everything that's going on about football, so just elaborate on that.
Okay, because Bury were withdrawn from the Football League, technically that forfeited their FA Cup place for this season. Which meant that for one team in the first round, they will get a bye straight into the second round. And the way it's working on Monday, which I don't agree with the way of doing it, but it'll be the last team in the hat will get a bye into the second round. They'll get the prize money for winning a first round game, so they're getting free money from the FA. But then they're 90 minutes away from getting, you know, a real game against a big Premier League team where you do get club-changing money.
So it's the oddball. The oddball that's going to be in the hat.
Yeah.
That, to be fair, I agree with that. I think, how else would you like to do it? That is essentially, it's all put like you're going in, everybody is fair game. The last one that doesn't come out is the one that gets the bye.
I'd have liked to have seen a ball number allocated to a bye. I think that would have been a better way of doing it. Just so it could be anyone at any time. And it means you're not necessarily disappointed because the team is second or third last out of the hat. If you're drawn in that last tie to be played, you'll be disappointed you have
that's
a game.
The drama, though. The magic of the FA Cup, George. When you say a ball allocated to a bye,
yeah.
But what do you mean then?
So ball number 72, or whichever number Berry would have been, would just be bye. So if you get drawn against that whoever that ball number,
I see.
You would get the bye rather than having to play a game.
I see.
Think that would have been a better way of doing it than making it last out of the hat. Because as it is, watching that draw Monday night, fans will be slightly disappointed when they come out of the hat, whoever they're playing, because they would have probably quite liked that bye.
So what, you're saying that every team's going to be annoyed with the draw?
But I think pretty much,
unless the team that gets the bye.
Yeah, most teams will be, purely because of the fact that if you look at it, like I said, if you get into the second round, you are one performance away from the really big game. Hmm. And when you look at that, that's irresistible to every club still in the hat at this stage.
Big game, of course, which you had last season and were very successful in it. So do you often believe that it's law of averages? You had your time last season?
Yeah, but you look at it and as a club, we tend to have one really good year like a few years ago when we had Akinfenwa and Matt Tubbs and we got Liverpool at home in the cup. Not last year, but the year before we had Tottenham away at Wembley. Last year we had West Ham. We had two non-league clubs in the first two rounds, then a club in our league in the third round, and then West Ham. So we had an easy way to the fourth round where we got West Ham, we beat them. We then had what should have been a winnable tie against Millwall, which we didn't win. But I do think this year we're due a bad draw, and that worries me.
Just quickly before we move on from this as well, we were discussing the fact that you have been to Haringey Borough. And there were dreadful scenes there yesterday, of course. This week has been saturated with news surrounding racism. We saw what happened in Bulgaria with England. There is the current campaign going on in English football. That is purely coincidental, by the way. But the match was abandoned between Haringey and Yeovil yesterday because what we're led to believe is racism towards the players.
Yeah, the alleged racism came from people in the Yeovil end towards the Haringey keeper. And for me, that's disgusting, because ask any Wimbledon fan, when we went to Haringey last year, it's the nicest reception we got since we were at that level.
Really?
And it was a disgrace. When I was on the train leaving the game on Saturday and I saw that on my phone, I was disgusted in football that anyone who could call themselves a football fan could do that. And I think the FA have to take action. Personally, I'd be upset if Yeovil don't get kicked out of the competition, because I think they need to set an example here.
Interesting. Those are the thoughts of George Jones. And this is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport, looking ahead to the Burton clash next.
For the fans, by the fans, Love Sport Radio.
This is indeed Love Sport, and this is the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show with me, Matt Beadle, and George Jones of the 9 Years podcast. We've got about 6 minutes or so left of the show, and I'm going to take the first minute of that to read a bit of backlash, George. I feared this, I'm not going to lie to you. I feared that you might get a bit of backlash for what you said about Wally Downes and the end of last season. And Dean P has bitten back, because he said, whatever you think of Wally's mistakes off the pitch, don't rewrite history. Wally was a huge part of keeping us up last season. His passion, his getting players to perform who didn't under Neil, he instilled belief into players who were low on confidence.
No, I do think there's a point there, but I think you look at last season, we stayed up because of the two players who came in January, Ramsdale and Seddon. They were not necessarily 100% Wally signings. You look at the formation, which was a big part in keeping us up. We sort of lucked into that by only having a certain number of players available away to Portsmouth. And I just think that, yeah, Wally definitely deserves some credit for keeping us up. But I think to say he's the sole reason we stayed up is incredibly unfair on, you know, other people at the club who played a key role last season in getting certain players to come in. And they're the players who kept us up.
So on that note, is Glyn Hodges the sole reason for the upturn in form this season?
No, I think there were several reasons for the uptake in form this year. And I think if you speak to the players, you'll have to ask them, you know, are they happier? You know, now there's a different person in charge. You know, and I think you do have to speak to people and ask, is, you know, there has definitely been something that has changed in the players. You can see it. It seems like they have more energy since then. There's been an upturn in performances. The players seem more energetic. The football is certainly much more entertaining. And, you know, you have to ask yourself, is that because someone has left more than someone has come in? And I think that definitely needs to be a question asked.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Well, it is Burton next week, my friend. Relatively average campaign they've had thus far. 1-4, drawn 3, a lost 4. now just 3 points ahead of AFC Wimbledon in the League One table because of that aforementioned upturn in form just there. What is your view on the game coming up, presuming you'll be at the Pirelli?
Yeah, of course I'll be there. It's a big game on Tuesday. I mean, Burton had a horrific result on Saturday. They lost 4-1 to Fleetwood, and that'll hurt them. You know, they're pretty much, like you said, if you look at their form and you look at their where they are in the table, they're pretty much average. And you've got to look at it and you think, we've got no game on Saturday. This has to be one where the players give everything they can because they have got 10 days to recover after it. And I do think it's one where if we can go there and win, we could be 16th in the table if we win.
Wow.
And for us, that just, it would mean that we'd have breathing room going into the Saturday where we are not playing. And it would just basically confirm just the turnaround over the last month or so of, you know, where we were cut adrift. And I was saying here, it's getting towards a stage where we need to give up hope. And the fact that is now we are close. We are, you know, if we win, we're 16th. And I think that's, it shows the turnaround. And that's why Tuesday's such a big game for us. And if you look at Burton, if you look at, you know, how they concede their goals and their style of play, they're not far off a perfect side for us to play. They're weak in the air. We score a ridiculously large number of goals from headers over the last few weeks. And I think it's just one of those things now where we can, you look at them, they're not overly clinical, which is okay for us because we give away a few chances. So the fact they're not clinical will help us. They're weak in the air. You know, they're not great against defending counters, which is how, you know, headers and counters, that's how we score, and that's Burton's weakness. So I think for us, it's a very winnable game. And like I said, with 10 days off after it, if we can win, it would do huge amounts of, it would be incredible for the confidence of the squad.
Yeah, absolutely. And you talk about the turnaround in fortunes. It's a turnaround from you, George. Like you just said, you were beside yourself a few weeks ago, mate. You were ready to give up. You were ready to hand in your season ticket. You were done.
Now, I think I was on and I was basically saying, you know, we're 2 or 3 weeks away from, you know, having to write off the season. You know, that was going into it. And I was I did say, you know, after the Burton game, if we've only got 1 or 2 points over that period, I think we're gone. And so far, you know, we've got 9 points over that period. And I think that just shows the turnaround at the club with one game left in this little spell of games. And if we can get double digits of points from that run, then that leaves us in a really good position to come back, have a run in before Christmas while we've still got force, and try and get enough points to make us so we've got a bit of wiggle room towards the second half of the season.
Absolutely. It is 5 trips to Burton in the Football League. Not a victory yet.
No, we don't have a great record there.
It's not the best record. Do you remember, quiz time with George, we've got to do this, the first trip to Burton, the score?
Was that a 3-1 defeat?
Close, George. It was 3-2. It's been 3-2, 6-2, 1-1, 0-0, and of course 3-0 last season. George Jones, this has been the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show. You've got a bit of admin before we go?
Yeah, I just want to say the FA Youth Cup draw was this week. We've got a home game. That'll be probably potentially on the Tuesday the 29th or around that date. And it's at home to Leighton Orient. It'll be great to get some people down to Kings Meadow because it's a special year group we've got at the moment in the under-18s. And if we can get a bit of crowd, it'll be great for them. It'll be great for the fans to see the next generation of Wimbledon heroes.
Absolutely. Hear, hear. Thank you, George, for your time as ever. I'm sure we'll see you again soon on the AFC Wimbledon Fan Show on Love Sport Radio.
Thanks for downloading this podcast from Love Sport Radio. For more, go to lovesportradio.com for all the latest podcasts, news and views. Or for more, follow us at Love Sport Radio on Twitter.